Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the 8-Bit Adventures podcast. I am your host, Sean Hayes, and we're here to bring you episode number 270 with the latest and greatest geeky news of the week. Hope you're all doing well, staying. From what I understand, not only is it super hot here, it's also super hot over in Britain, or at least England. So I hope you're all still staying cool, staying hydrated as best as you can. Because it's too hot. It's too hot. Thankfully, we did get a little bit more of gaming news this week. Not really anything enough to do like a big deep dive on. So for our deep dive this week, I'm going to talk about Monster Hunter. And what there is to like about Monster Hunter. Since, you know, that's sort of been my go-to comfort game since Sunbreak came out. Just a lot of surprise announcements. I mean, Nintendo has not done a Direct, but decided to just, like, sort of spit out a bunch of, like, really big announcements. And one thing, I didn't put it in the show notes, there's a couple articles circulating around of Nintendo essentially now offering the same benefits for same-sex domestic partnerships as they do for essentially heterosexual, like, married couples, since in Japan their Supreme Court just struck down same-sex marriage. So, like, basically Nintendo citing their own policy of non-discrimination for sexual preference, decided to extend those benefits. So, I mean, you know, that doesn't necessarily excuse, like, the sort of worker stuff that was happening at NOA, but at least, like, that's kind of a big deal in Japan. And this is specifically Nintendo Japan, or Nintendo Co. Limited, I think is what LTD stands for. So the parent company, since it's Japan's not a great place if you're not straight, I guess, just due to the law specifically. So, like, socially, a majority of people, would like to see gay rights and trans rights, the political leadership there not so keen on that. I think, like, most of the gaming journalism sites have articles on that, but that's just to throw that out there before we get into the news this week. With that said, why don't we just get right into it? so that I'm not dragging this out, you know, even further. All right, so first up, Bayonetta 3, Nintendo just out of the blue released today, a release date confirmed for October 28th of this year. So my guess would have been that if there was an E3 of some sort, that Nintendo would have put a presentation, like a direct presentation together, and announced all this stuff with, like, more gameplay footage or something. Because, like, we haven't seen anything new from Platinum since the last direct where they showed it, which is where the graphic is from for people watching the VOD or if you're watching live. There was no direct today. they just sort of decided to, like, stealth announce it. There's also, how do I describe this? There's essentially a mode to, make the game a little more PG-13, shall we say, to like make it a little less risque, or it just like covers up a lot of the models and removes a lot of sort of risque elements. And it's just like like a feature that you can turn on or off. I think like there's always a lot of pushback from the gaming community over things like this when it's like when a game makes a conscious decision one way or the other. So I think for something where like you could solve it with like a different skin for the models, I think it's like just to have it on a toggle switch is a decent solution. Unfortunately, not much more info about it. So we'll see if there's another announcement, or like another direct before October 28th, with more information on that. Next up, Kirby's Dream Buffet. So this is a new, Kirby, technically a racing game, that's announced for later this summer, where you play a bunch of Kirbys that are rolling down, courses made out of like desserts and stuff, with the goal to be the first one down. But like as you eat little candies and strawberries and chocolates and things on the course, your Kirby gets bigger, and thus as when the Kirby gets bigger, has more mass and therefore, you know, picks up speed going down the course. So your goal is to kind of like get the biggest Kirby by feeding him the most and like rolling him down the hill. It looks adorable. I think it has online multiplayer. I don't know how big this is going to be. Like, again, it's sort of just wildly announced out of the blue. But yeah, super cute little Kirby, a rolling racing game. Ubisoft, more controversial news, has announced that more than a dozen games, including several older Assassin's Creed titles, that have online components or DLC, will have those components shut off, as of September 1st. So essentially taking a look at, I think older games that maybe don't have as big of a presence among the player base, they're just essentially shutting the servers off, so you won't be able to do any online connectivity. Not great that like for some games that includes removing access to DLC. That's certainly, like, unless it's free DLC, or unless it was, like, just multiplayer-only DLC, does not feel great. And, you know, I mean, obviously at some point, like, for the online components, or for, like, online multiplayer, especially for what are mostly single-player stuff, like, you know, it might not be a huge deal, but then it makes you wonder what happens for, you know, later games coming out that will have an online, always online component, or are strictly multiplayer games. I mean, you know, I've kind of seen this before, not an Ubisoft game, but like Sword Coast Legends. Essentially, like the studio went belly up, and like, because it was a digital-only game on Steam, it got to the point where you couldn't access the page anymore. And, like, it was even the case of, if you had the game, you couldn't play it. And, I mean, and this is nothing new in terms of, you know, digital-only games and services. Of, like, you know, they kind of do still have a shelf life, unless, you know, the community figures out, like, unless your game is capable of then handing it over to sort of an open source community to create solutions for keeping that stuff online. But, yeah, Ubisoft not really winning any favors on that one. And yeah, it's more than a dozen games. So like it's not just like a title here and there. Granted, you know, they are, as far as I'm aware, it is like older stuff. So like you're not gonna, you know, if like you're playing Valhalla or Odyssey, you know, it's not gonna be that, but it'll be like Liberation or Assassin's Creed 2. But still, you know, like I know there's a business argument for it, but yeah, I don't know. It, like, given that it's Ubisoft, like, it makes you wonder, like, how hard did they really investigate cost-benefit and if there are alternative solutions to this. And then just the removing of DLC sort of thing. And the fact that, like, it's inconsistent messaging on a game-to-game basis is also creating some confusion, particularly, like, on the Steam store. So, it's a big mess. And speaking of big messes, Bandai Namco, ransomware group Black Cat, made a claim that they hacked the publisher, and Bandai Namco confirmed that they were hacked. So I was, you know, putting two and two together, very likely that they were, that this group hacked them. So the publisher behind, you know, if you're not familiar with Bandai Namco for some reason, they are behind, Ace Combat, Pac-Man, Dragon Ball, like the Dragon Ball video games, the whole Dark Souls series, Elden Ring. They're still investigating the cause and the extent of the damage. So to confirm if, you know, these claims are true, and what exactly was hacked. You know, it's been a case where like other game publishers have been hacked and like what was released were upcoming projects and releases, which seems like a silly thing in this day and age. Like, why not go after targets that and actually make some sort of meaningful change? But they're trying to determine like whether customer info was leaked. So like that's a big deal. You know, find out if like people's like names, you know, and obviously like I would assume stuff would be encrypted, but like, ooh. Excuse me. You know, if basically even the encrypted stuff was leaked, which like could still be safe. But obviously, regardless of whether it's encrypted or not, like you don't want that information out in the wild, on the dark web. So, finally, Roll20 has announced that it is merging with One Bookshelf. Which is the parent company for Drive-Thru RPG and related online retailers. So Drive-Thru RPG is probably the biggest sort of place to get sort of digital tabletop RPG products. The sort of the biggest vendor of them. So what this means is that because the two are merging, there's going to be more seamless functionality between the two. Looks like users of Roll20 will now have full access to any purchases they made through DriveThruRPG, like through Roll20, which is kind of a big deal. Like at the very, like for now, it seems like they're just going with like adding the PDFs to your library so that you can then reference them from within Roll20. But it looks like then being able to have more functionality with them going forward. One of the curious points is that One Bookshelf is like through DriveThruRPG, I think, like also manages DMs, like Dungeon Masters or DMs Guild, Dungeon Masters Guild, which is sort of the official place to get third party stuff for Dungeons and Dragons. It's a little weird. So the way the open game license works from Wizards is that if you're going to make stuff that either is third party, but for existing IPs from Wizards of the Coast, or uses rules or expands upon rules that are outside of the scope of the fifth edition system reference document, like it goes on DM's Guild. Whereas stuff that's like original campaign settings or like essentially if it doesn't deal with that or like I mean, that's kind of pretty much the only is if you want to do something that like covers a campaign, like covers like a homebrew campaign setting, or if you want to just completely do something like you're limited to using the system reference document. But you can sell it wherever you want. So how that works, I don't know. And whether like we'll see sort of Wizards of the Coast make like a little bit of a power play to it to incorporate that. I don't know. Like if it's just content to let Roll20 do that, or since Wizards bought D&D Beyond, if they're going to look for ways to incorporate that into it, I don't know. But yeah, so especially since Wizards acquired D&D Beyond specifically, like this kind of makes sense as a way to consolidate, and provide further integration. So yeah, for me personally, like I'm a little conflicted because like Roll20, not like it is one of the biggest platforms for virtual tabletops. I'm not a fan of it. I think the UI is pretty bad. there's been a whole history of bad stuff with Roll20 that I think was resolved. I don't know if they booted their old CEO or not. But at least the current CEO of Roll20 will become the CEO of the new merged company. So that's kind of big news in the TTRPG space. So this means that like if you are currently a content, like an RPG content creator, and you sell stuff on DriveThruRPG, like, and you are a fan of Roll20, now there'll be a little bit more integration with people's Roll20 libraries. So that is going to wrap up our quick fire news for this week. So prepare yourselves, because now we're going to talk about Monster Hunter and what's to like about it. All right, so although I've talked about it on the podcast before, and we've talked about it in several episodes when like new games have come out and everything, what is Monster Hunter? And especially like if you're a fan of the comic, and because the past 2 weeks for the comic have been Monster Hunter related comics, Monster Hunter is an action game. It has RPG elements, but it's not an RPG. No matter what, you know, categorization and awards will tell you, it is an action game that has RPG elements. In which you play as a hunter works in some sort of host village, and you might be affiliated with the Hunters Guild in Monster Hunter Rise. I think it's sort of pre-world-spanning guild. And so, like, you're sort of, like, one of the first members in the village to, like, really, like, kind of reach a status where you get recognized. And you essentially go out and fulfill requests from villagers and protect the village from big, giant monsters. And typically, you know, the way the Monster Hunter games work is, like, it just escalates further and further until you, like, you fight, like, just, like, bigger and more dangerous monsters until you reach what are known as Elder Dragons, which are big, giant monsters who have abilities and effects that are so profound and so overwhelming that it sort of threatens the entire ecosystem around them, and it, like, warps the ecosystem. So we're talking sort of legendary Pokemon status. There's a lot of overlap between, like, sort of the lore behind legendary Pokemon and the lore behind Elder Dragons. They upset the balance of nature by their very presence. Your goal, you know, typically either to at least drive them off, if not sort of capture them, in order to restore the ecosystem back to back to its balanced state. And oftentimes Elder Dragons will like prey upon other monsters who exist as part of the ecosystem, whether as apex predators or not. And to do this, like, you use weapons and armor. This is sort of where the customizability feature, like RPG features, come in, where the whole point is basically a loot grind, where you fight monsters, you get, like, you carve them up to get pieces of materials from them, and then you use those materials and turn them into weapons and armor that you then go to fight more monsters to get more materials to turn into weapons and armor. You rinse and repeat. That is sort of the gameplay loop. All the different weapons have very different play styles. There's no levels, so it's not like a leveling based system. It's entirely based on just like your gear. So as you get more powerful gear, you get more powerful stuff. But I mean, like your health and stamina aren't governed by, your level at all. But mainly, you know, whether you have items or you find power-ups and stuff that like just extend your meter, or you have abilities, further customization from your gear. So like all pieces of gear give sort of passive skills that have different ranks. And so mixing and matching your gear to like maximize certain skills or find ones that have essentially gem sockets to then get the right gems to gem in the gem sockets to get the right skills allows you to sort of craft a build to fulfill like certain roles within the group or to complement your weapon play style. And ultimately, like, it is a game basically about just doing boss battles. So there are smaller monsters that typically, like, they'll do a bunch of missions to introduce you to the game by doing those or doing, like, gathering or fetch quests. But, like, it's not like an MMO where it's like, okay, we're going to do a dungeon. We have to clear, like, all these trash, like, we have to clear trash mobs first before we can go fight the boss. Like, they're smaller monsters, but they kind of just exist, and you can completely ignore them while you're on a hunt. Like, they might come after you and chase after you and deal, like, little bits of damage, but for the most part, you could ignore them and just go straight for whatever monster it is that you go out to hunt. That said, Monster Hunter does have a reputation for not being new player friendly. For a long time, there was a lot of parallels with Dungeons and Dragons, actually, where like the best way to learn Monster Hunter was to find, you know, and conversely, the best way to learn how to play Dungeons and Dragons is you find somebody that already knows how to play and you go play with them and they show you the ropes as you're playing. You know, so thankfully D&D sort of tried to move away from that a little bit by making, you know, accessibility into the edition, into fifth edition a lot easier. I don't know if Monster Hunter has reached that point. When they transitioned from Monster Hunter 4 and whatever that generation was to Monster Hunter World on PC, they did a complete overhaul of a lot of the systems and a lot of quality of life improvements that made it a lot easier to get into the game. And it saw huge boom in popularity, particularly among Western audiences. So now that there's sort of been that renaissance of Monster Hunter with World, they kind of took a lot of those features and quality of life improvements and then brought them back to doing Monster Hunter Rise, while also like incorporating some of the other elements from older Monster Hunter games that a lot of people miss. So like if you're a person that like really likes get into tinkering with builds and different skills and stuff, Monster Hunter is great for that. If you like epic sort of big giant monster boss battle fights, like this is entirely of what the game is. Or like learning different weapons and different play styles for each weapon. And these are, they're, cartoonishly oversized weapons. Like, if you're looking for something like, I can't remember the name of the game, but it's that sort of, like, trying to be realistic medieval combat sort of battle royale game. I don't know if it's For Honor, if that's what it's called. Like, this is not that. This is, like the class of weapons called greatsword are not like estics or Zweihanders. Like, they are not very long, thin swords that are, you know, designed to like twirl around and do zone control or for lunging and slashing. This is more like a buster sword. And, you know, to the point that I think in World, I think there was a Final Fantasy. Like, there was definitely a Final Fantasy crossover event, and I want to say there was, like, a Buster Sword skin for Great Swords. But they're essentially big, giant meat cleavers, you know, often made out of, like, monster jawbones and stuff. Like, to the point that, you know, a lot of the moves are, like, you throw it down onto the ground and then use the momentum to catapult yourself into a cartwheel over the blade. And then further use the momentum when you come back up to then do a big giant smash attack. Or that you can flip it sideways and then use it as a shield. You know, giant oversized hammers. You know, the insect glaive, which is essentially a quarterstaff type weapon that comes with a bug. Like, all insect glaives come with an insect that not only helps you launch yourself into the air, but then also, like, launches out at the monster and, like, grabs a little bit of its essence and then brings it back. There's bow guns, which are sort of a weird combination of rifles and crossbows. You know, bows in the game, like, there's a move that they introduced in World that they kept in Rise called the Dragon Piercer, where it's not great, like, mechanically, but visually it is such an awesome move. But when you use Dragon Piercer, you see that, like, your bow has rockets on it to further help launch your arrows, and the arrows are, like, the size of spears. It's cartoonish and it's comical, but it's epic. And, like, I think there's subtext in which, like, as a monster hunter, you are almost, like, on a demigod level. Like, it doesn't really get into, like, any religion in the game, but, like, you are clearly supposed to be some sort of, like, superhuman in order to, like, lift these weapons and fight these monsters and wear this armor. I feel like over-the-top, silly, cartoonish, fantasy weapons. And this is something where, like the game, it creates its own physics to make these things work. Because otherwise, you know, like a giant meat cleaver weapon, like, it should not work. Like, it should just be too heavy. Or if it's going to be light enough to actually swing it around, then it's, like, too fragile to smash them, like, and have it survive one or two hits. Or, you know, the idea of a gun lance. or, you know, there's a switch axe weapon, which, like, it can be a sword and shield, or you can combine the two and somehow turn that into a big, giant, you know, great axe. But, like, Monster Hunter makes it work, and it just leans into it. It's just, like, I mean, if you can't suspend your disbelief on this, this game might just not be for you. Because, like, it's just, like, this is how this world works. And if you want to really get into this game, you just got to accept it. And that's something, you know, I think there's a lot of, like, to take that lesson and apply it to D&D, I think there's a lot of people that were, like, wish D&D was more simulationist than it is. And I got news for, like, even third edition, which, like, prided itself on internal consistency of mechanics, or rather for having mechanics for every little thing to try and be simulationist, still didn't do a great job. And like, I mean, if you really want, like, you could, like, you'd have to make the game so complex and have so many different choices and options, that it kind of gets bogged down, and then almost becomes unwieldy a little bit. And I'm sure, like, there's some games that also, like, lean into that and attract a certain demographic. But, like, to reach the level of audience that a game has, like D&D, is, you know, you kind of have to simplify things a bit. And, I mean, at a certain point, like, you kind of wish, like, they just leaned further into the mechanics and said, like, you know, because the whole concept of hit points comes up all the time of, like, what do hit points mean? And sometimes, like, the description of what hit points mean doesn't agree with the mechanics of the game. But in Monster Hunter, they fully lean into it. And they're just like, you know what? Yeah. I mean, you guys are just, you're just superheroes. That's why you're able to run around with a, you know, with a 10-foot meat cleaver made out of the bones and scales of a dragon monster. So yeah. Because I, you know, and I mentioned, like, giant monsters, most of the monsters in the game are either based on dragons or dinosaurs. Prehistoric beasts, I should say. You know, there are some monsters that don't fit into either category, but are just sort of like, well, we're going to take this animal and we're going to give these features to, like, an existing prehistoric beast type template, so that we can do things like have a giant, you know, 15-foot tall killer rabbit monster. You know, and then from there, I'll, you know, start thinking about, like, how does it fit in the environment? What sort of interesting elemental and evolutionary advantages can we give it? How does it interact with other monsters? And they really kind of go hard on the sort of behavioral aspects of these monsters. So, like, for people that, you know, enjoy Dark Souls and Elden Ring, like, a lot of Monster Hunter is learning sort of attack patterns and, like, what kind of things can this monster do? And, like, what do you have to look out for? And what sort of tells does it have? And sometimes you still just can't expect it. But, like, sort of getting a read on what the monster is going to do, like, in the immediate future, and then sort of, like, switching it up to, like, parry or dodge out of the way. Or whether it prompts an opening for you to sort of, like, do a little counterattack. I remember when I first started playing Monster Hunter Tri back in, you know, it might have been, like, 2009, on the Wii, I remember playing that game and being like, this is, for me, it was a complete game changer in game design. It was like, I had never before seen, you know, a level of thought put into, like, a creature's behavior. And it kind of makes sense where, like, if the whole game revolves around these big monsters that you go out and fight, like, you know, there's not a whole lot of story. There's not a whole lot of, like, overworld traveling, right? Like, even in World, which is, like, sort of its most open-ish, it's still, like, you pick a region, you go to that region, and, like, you're just running around the map, you know, and there's areas on the map, but, like, you're not doing a big, it's not like Xenoblade, where you're doing a big, giant open-world experience, or Breath of the Wild, or Elden Ring, or something like that. So, it's really, the focus is sort of the creatures that live in these environments, and, you know, like, when they start designing new monsters, they take a look at, you know, not just how they interact with the player characters, but also the environment and with other monsters, and think about it behaviorally. So, like, like, if you're not noticed by a creature, you know, whether it's a monster or a little, you know, small monster, you know, you can observe them for a little bit and see just like they have a whole slew of different idle animations. Like sometimes, you know, if they're not stressed out or impacted by anything outside, like they might just lie down and take a nap. You know, if they come across a, you know, another, you know, like if little creatures come across a big creature, like they'll run out of the way and sort of like hang back until there's an opening. Like if the monster gets stunned or put to sleep or something, like then they'll start rushing out and start attacking the monster. You know, as a way, you know, as you would see with like, you know, is it like real world creatures that like, you know, on their own, like might not be able to overtake something, but like with the right conditions and right opportunity, they'll just jump it. And so you might see like your other enemies, quote unquote, turn into, you know, very part-time allies. And then just so many of the monster designs are just so great. There's so many of them that I would love. I really would love to see a collaboration between Dungeons and Dragons and Capcom for, you know, Monster Hunter specifically, to like bring those monsters into Dungeons and Dragons. Like, even if it was like a one-off little special PDF type thing, like they did for Magic the Gathering, but just like as a, you know, as like a $10 PDF or something weird. Just because of the unique flavor and mechanics that a lot of them bring. I mean, you know, we have from World that also had a reprise in Monster Hunter Rise, which is the latest one on Nintendo Switch. You have a monster called Tobi Kadachi, which is sort of this whitish and blue sort of furred drake, we'll say, to use D&D terms. So it doesn't have wings, but it is sort of a quadrupedal lizard-like dragon, but that has a big sort of bushy furry tail, and is covered in sort of these thick bristles that when they rub together, like, generate static electricity. And so, like, it's a lightning-aligned monster. And then also, when it opens its arms and legs, has patagia, so that it can, you know, glide or do brief flights or just really acrobatic leaps to sort of, like, jump up and open the patagia to, like, stall itself for a moment and then come down. Very acrobatic, great climbers, to the point that, like, very influenced by squirrels. So, like, you could call it a squirrel dragon. you know, and then you have a monster that hasn't shown up in a long time called Giganox. One of my favorites from Tri, where it's like if you took a leech and you gave it like big rubbery wings and legs, and it spit poison and then had bioluminescence on it and it inhabited dark caves. Very, you know, very creepy monster. That then, like, when you crafted the armor, created essentially like a Dracula set of armor, where it was, you know, big vampire, you know, a high collared robe or like cape with, you know, like a suit vest and you know, high boots and gloves and things like that. And so for the aesthetics of the monster to carry through to the gear that they provide you is also really like a neat aesthetic for the game. So and then, you know, the community is just pretty great. I mean, you know, I've done like plenty of random groups. I also don't know, like, I didn't do any random groupings for Monster Hunter World. And I know, I guess I've heard a lot of, you know, horror stories about really bad pickup groups. And I don't know if it's just because it's a Western thing. But I've done plenty for Rise, and it seems like I'm getting a lot of players out of Japan. And every group has been great. You know, I mean, if let's put it this way, if they are saying very rude things to me, it's in Japanese and I can't, you know, I don't understand it. So But it's also just through like emotes and like quick chat type stuff. So probably not, you know, and it might just be like, oh, you know, it might be like some sort of thing of like, I'm laying down a trap or I'm going to catch the monster or I'm going to use a potion or something. But yeah, I've had pretty good experiences. The only thing is that everybody seems to still default to capturing a monster in Rise when vastly more often than not, killing a monster and then carving it up gives you better rewards. It's just capturing happens faster. And there are still some rewards that have a better chance of showing up if you capture a monster. It just sometimes you have to be proactive now and say, like, don't capture it, please. It used to be the case in Monster Hunter where capturing a monster was much more difficult, and so it gave you better rewards. And then they seem to have flipped that. Like, especially since now there's a lot of indicators as to say, like, go ahead and capture the monster now in the UI. Which I think is great. And so, like, capturing it now makes it easier in sort of like easy mode. And it also, I guess, if it would be a problem, prevents sort of post, sort of post hunt trolling that I guess was a problem in prior games. I don't know. But, so yeah, I mean, honestly, that's what I love about Monster. For me, it's just a cozy game. Like, I have gotten into a rhythm. I only focus on one weapon, you know, and I do my best to try and get really good at that weapon. But also, you know, I'm at the point in the game where, you know, it sort of did a gear reset. So almost like, for anyone that's familiar with MMOs, like when an expansion comes out and suddenly all of your gear is rendered moot and like you start getting new gear, like you start getting new, like uncommon, like green level gear that's better than your purples. Sort of similar thing happens where, like when you reach a new set of ranks, like when you go from low rank to high rank or high rank to G rank, slash master rank, it sort of resets the armor. So that, like, the base armor has better, you know, has better defense values, has better skills on them. And so, like, you might keep your old pieces for a while if they were really good. But also, you're going to find out that, like, they don't hold up as long. And you're going to need that extra defense power and extra attack power for your weapons. So you'll swap them out sort of as you go. And try and sort of rebuild a build that works for you. So, yeah, so for that, I'm at a point where I'm kind of waiting to get stuff that helps with, like, a bow build. But it means that I have the stuff necessary to do, like, a support build so that when I roll into a match with, you know, with other people, you know, I drink a potion. Now suddenly it's not just healing me, but it's healing everybody around me. Or if I use a buff item, it also applies to everybody. And so, like, you know, even if I'm not the best player in the world, by any means, like, I'm not great. I get hit a lot. I'm not great at judging where attacks are going to go and distance and things like that. Or when I should beat, or when I should dodge so that I can, like, perfectly counterattack. You know, it means that I'm still bringing some sort of utility to the group and therefore helping everybody out. Which, you know, is a nice feeling for me. So, yeah. Plus also, you know, you get little cat buddies. And in later games, like, you have the ability to customize your little cat buddy. In a previous game, I think it was 4 in one of the games in that generation, there was also a mode in which you could play as one of the little cat buddies, like either with other hunters or in a separate mode all on its own. And, like, that allowed you to bring, like, new and interesting skills into the match. And that was, I wish they continued that forward, because that was so much fun. and all of the little cat buddies like talk in cat puns, which is great in and of itself. So yeah, I mean, that's just what I loved about Monster Hunter. So yeah, I mean, if you're a person that plays Monster Hunter, I'm always looking for people to play with. So, you know, hit me up with a direct message on social media somewhere. And let me know. We'll try and coordinate some sort of playtime. If you're not currently playing Monster Hunter and this sort of is, you know, makes you think like, oh, well, maybe I want to check it out. I know Monster Hunter World was on sale. I don't know if it still is. But also, Monster Hunter Rise is available on PC. Sunbreak, the expansion, I don't know if that's out for PC, but it is out on Nintendo Switch. And it's great. You know, I can't sing the praise of Monster Hunter enough. You know, even with, I mean, the learning curve is an issue with the game. And it's one of those things where, you know, for some people, like, it's just finding the right weapon. For some people, it's like all of a sudden it just clicks and now suddenly they get it and everything's so much better. But yeah, you know, I'd encourage people, like, if you like arcade style boss battles and the whole game is just boss battles, you know, give it a try. I would encourage it. So that, I think that's going to wrap it up. So why don't we switch things over and talk about Questlog? All right, so coincidentally enough, last week's Questlog was play Monster Hunter Rise Sunbreak, which I did. I'm also not going to include it in the goals in the future because it's just something that I do, so it feels cheap to include it as a goal because, like if I'm going to do it anyway, it's not much of a goal. However, do 3 pages of writer's notes, I did it. So I feel good about that. It's really hard to come up with, like, what do I think should be included in writer's notes? Because I think my goal is to, like, help provide additional context for things that, like, might be apparent for folks who have been following my comics since 2008, but might not be apparent to folks who started at the reboot, like, in 2015. And so, like, that's where I'm kind of trying to approach it from. But this is something where I may have to enlist help to just kind of, you know, for, like, people to, like, look at the page and be like, and ask them, what sort of questions do you have? Like, what, you know, like, is there anything that isn't clear from what is on these pages? And then use that as an opportunity to just put, like, you know, writer's note, blah, 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 at the bottom of the page. So for this upcoming week, the goal is to do 5 pages, you know, and kind of think about that a little bit more. You know, doing 3 pages was kind of a breeze, actually. So if 5 pages continues to be a breeze, you know, we might bump it up to 10. And if 10 pages feels like it's a good amount, like, we'll keep that as a goal, you know, and then essentially we finish it in like 10 weeks. Although I would like to hopefully finish this whole thing by the fall. So by, you know, by Thanksgiving at the latest, I think, you know, I would love for this to be available for this holiday season, you know, the book. So here's hoping. But if it turns out to be, you know, that it's actually really easy to just, like, write writer's notes on a page, I may just blaze through it and just keep going. You know, and then worry about, like, artwork, like, more artwork to go in the book. So, all right, folks, well, that is going to wrap up this week's episode. Thank you all for joining me. If you would like to see more content from 8-Bit Adventures, be sure to check out the website over at 8-bitadventures.com. Over there, you can find the 8-Bit Adventures comic, in my portfolio, VODs and files for the podcasts. And, you know, past VODs for when I was, you know, doing a lot more game streaming. Those are up there. If you would like to help support all that content, as well as a lot of my D&D projects of just campaign designs that I'm doing, but, you know, mostly for the podcast and the comic, be sure to check out patreon.com/8bitadventures. That is the best way to support all of this. It also allows you to be a bit, little bit more granular with your support. You can support for as little as $1 a month. Every little bit helps. All patrons get early access to the 8-Bit Adventures comic. They get access to patron-exclusive comics featuring my dog. I mean, if you want to go to a higher tier, you also get sort of playtest content for my D&D stuff. So, I want to give a big shout out and thank you to all of the current patrons. Thank you for your continued support. It goes toward things like web hosting costs, podcast hosting costs, various subscriptions for services that I use for these projects, you know, namely for like music licenses and things like that. You know, more so for other podcasts than for this one, which brings me to our opening theme is One Up by Professor Shy Guy. Be sure to check out his work at professorshyguy.bandcamp.com. He's great, you know, does a lot of chiptune stuff, both covers and original songs. One Up is such an original song. I would highly recommend NPC and the RPG song. Those are both really great. So once again, thank you to Professor Shy Guy for 270 episodes of One Up being the podcast opening. And that is going to wrap things up for this week. So once again, thank you all for joining, whether you're watching live or listening to the audio version of this podcast. We'll see you next time. So as always, have fun, happy gaming, and enjoy your pie cake.